got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA. Now, here are the nerds.
Welcome to the Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, here in the Aloe Fiber Studios. We've got Scott Magerflesh, Nick Kenny, and Micah Kilpatrick behind the glass, a.k.a.
Darth Monger.
Darth Ambivalous.
Darth Harmonic.
And I swear you do that every week. The moment that we play that, you like get into your very angelic, pristine, oh, look at me, I'm so fancy.
Darthus Pincus.
So is that,
never gets old.
Is that how I'm viewed?
I would say no on either front. It's just kind of interesting. You're not the Darthus Pincus. But you're also not the overly... You can play that role when you need to, but that is not your normal persona.
What, the Darthus Binkus role?
Correct. And the Darth Harmonic, the Darth Harmonic.
And everything in between.
Oh, yes.
Well, speaking of Darthus Binkus, holy cow, yeah. This week's revelation with The Mandalorian, we finally get the end of the story of how Grogu was rescued by the Jedi Temple, and it was none other than
Darthus Binkus.
What, kind of, yeah. Sort of.
No, the actor. Yeah. I forget his name, but the guy who played
Ahmad Best is his name.
Ahmad Best.
Yeah, and Ahmad Best, there you go. The guy who was Jar Jar Binks.
But here's the cool thing is I love the fact that he is reprising a role that he's played before. So he played that Jedi in one of the video games, and I can't remember off the top of my head which one it was. I was reading about it before, but he played that character. So this is not the first time
he's been a Jedi. He's also in, there's a Disney series of like, Knights in the Hidden Temple, something of
that. Yeah,
the Hidden
I think that's what it was.
Well, no, what was,
that a
when
series?
I was growing up, Scott, this was 20 years before you grew up, or after you grew up.
Thank
but
you.
Whatever, Legends of the Hidden Temple when I was growing up.
Okay.
But now there's a like Jedi of the Hidden Temple, and he is the main host for that, and he plays Jedi Kelligan.
Yeah.
Quok. Spock. Bok.
That's not it.
Well.
It's like.
Kelligan.
Yeah.
Kelligan something. Mm. But he gets to play it, and he was, honest to God, and this is kind of a sad, poignant moment. One of the, if not the most hated characters from the prequels. And Ahmad Best almost killed himself because of the hate mail and death threats he got from fans.
Yeah.
And Star Wars fans, shame on you. Shame on you if you're giving death threats to somebody acting out the character they were expected to portray. Like, shame on you. And I am so sad that he considered suicide because of that. But he comes back in the most epic way of being the Jedi who saves Grogu from that attack on the Jedi Temple.
Yeah. Well, and I also think you've got to keep in mind, and this is where I wonder where they're going with it, that the ship that he got Grogu to was Nubian. So
Nubian, eh?
Yes, I knew you were going to do that. But we literally get into that mode of going, all right, so Naboo's aware, but it also makes me wonder, was, you know, the Chancellor aware of this?
Because he
remember,
was from Naboo.
He was the Senator of Naboo and a few other systems, but it's like, how much is he aware of? How much is he not? But I love
or
the fact
do you
that they
think
could.
That Jar Jar was aware, because Jar Jar had a taming process, if you will. In episode 2, he did not have as much interaction. In episode 3, he even had less. But might he have known that Jedi needed to be saved and recommended them to be saved? Or did Palps, as a senator, former senator of Naboo, known about Grogu's potential and had him rescued?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I I almost feel like that we're trying to draw too many corollaries to that that really don't end. And Kelleran Beg is the name of the character, and it was in the Star Wars Jedi Temple Challenge. So it was Legends of the Hidden Temple, 10 episodes.
I like it.
Yep. Series. And so, but Ahmaud Best played that character. So it's not the first time he's done that, but we're reprising that role in the whole new iteration from a canon perspective. And I like the way that they're doing that. And that now we know, go back to the whole Nubian thing. And I think they're putting pieces in place that we could pick up that you may or may not want to pick up that could or could not create references. I think it's like potential Easter eggs that we're all just scrambling to figure it out.
Well, Scott Neutide and I talked before the episode, and we have so much to discuss, so we're dedicating two segments to this tonight.
Yeah.
Of what this might mean. So you have, you know, Grogu picked up, he's saved. I challenged, why was Grogu guarded by four Jedi Knights, Jedi Masters, whatever they were.
And why do they suck so badly at fighting?
Okay,
well, for those the philosophers?
Let's just stop, because the 501st was the best of the best of the clone troopers at that point, and that's who were on the attack of the Jedi Temple.
And if you'd like to become a member of the 501st, go to 501.com.
501st.com.
501st.com.
Were they at 501c3?
Gosh, dang it, Micah. It's a... Where's the womp womp music?
Yeah, I don't know.
I wish they were wearing jeans.
I can't roll my eyes enough.
Look, all they were doing was pointing and shooting.
They were better marksmen than what we saw in any of the stormtroopers that came out after them.
I am a better marksman. And
we're going to challenge that on April 15th. Is Micah a better marksman than a clone trooper? Ooh. Scott, you have a clone trooper costume, right?
I do, yeah.
Micah?
I got a couple.
You're just Micah.
No, I don't have a clone trooper.
Well, that's fine. Costume. We're going to provide the weaponry, and we're going to see if a clone... April, is that a Saturday, I hope?
I don't know. We'll find out.
You know what? Stay tuned, because we want to challenge Micah on this BS assessment.
All
because
right, so
the 501st
April 15th is a Saturday.
Good. That's a good day to do this,
well
Micah.
Done.
We're
going
to
get you.
The 501st was vicious. They were known for their accuracy and their conquering abilities, really.
That's why they were called...
They worked for Anakin Skywalker,
Vader's Fist. That's right.
Well, do not Google that. Actually,
well, you can.
Let us know what you see.
It's okay. You will get the costuming organization.
Yes, not
other things, but
something nefarious.
Wow, okay.
Maybe.
Good use of the word nefarious there, by the way.
I know words sometimes.
Yes, you do.
So we get them coming in. Why is Grogu guarded by four Jedi and then gets rescued by one Jedi who, I love that story, he's trained in dueling lightsabers single-handedly, like Ahsoka is. The battle sequence was okay, but we get Temuera Morrison back
as the voice
of the clones, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But if we go back to episode 3, we see a bunch of younglings who were also maybe younglings when Obi-Wan went to Yoda in episode 2 to discuss Kamino.
Yep.
And they're left unguarded. And I know, Scott, you mentioned earlier that in the flashbacks for Reva in Obi-Wan, well, yeah, she was a Padawan, but she had to fight for her life. Yes, but I don't think we saw these young Padawans basically said, and here's my thought. You had four Jedi run in. The Jedi Temple is under attack. Where's Grogu? Here.
Yeah.
No, let me finish, because this is kind of funny. And it ties into Star Wars. They get Grogu. They leave. And, you know, the young one who says, Master Skywalker, what are we supposed to do? They ask the same thing to the Jedi who saved them. Master so-and-so, what are we supposed to do? And I think they responded with, lock the doors and hope they don't have blasters.
Mm. So you're trying to pull in a episode 4 R2 and 3PO reference.
No, Han. Han, when he told the droids that.
That's right. So that actually gets said twice in that movie, because at the very beginning, if you remember when they're in Mos Eisley's, he says, 3PO says, lock the door.
And then
Han says it, lock the door. And then he
blasters.
Says, hope they don't have, lock the door. And Han says, I hope they don't have blasters. And so I was answering you before you got to the second part of that.
That's fair.
So that's fair.
And maybe that didn't happen where I thought it was. But did they really sacrifice all these younglings just to save Grogu?
I think you're really trying to make this whole thing into a much more dark and abysmal thing. I don't think it was like they sacrificed all these younglings in order to save Grogu. I think they were all trying to save them the best they could. And for whatever reason, the younglings that Anakin slaughtered, and we know he was envisioning cutting down sunflowers thanks to robot chicken.
He basically slaughtered crappy ones.
He slaughtered younglings, maybe.
The crappy ones?
Well,
First of all, they call him master, and he's not a master. They were trying to appease him at that point.
He slaughtered the younglings who weren't as good as Grogu.
Well, okay.
Grogu was 32 years old, maybe 15?
You're splitting hairs here. Within the Jedi Order, it's master and apprentice. So it wasn't like, because Obi-Wan, Anakin always referred to him as master. And that was not predicated on whether he was a Jedi Knight or a Jedi Master. He was that individual's master. So I think that little dialogue in the Jedi Council room when Anakin slaughters them all is not a dig on Anakin not being a master. It's simply a form of respect. So,
or an SOS.
We have not talked about anything that Mando and Din Djarin and Bo-Katan did. So I guess we need another segment.
We might need to. Stay tuned for more of The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA here in the Aloe Fiber Studios. We'll be right back.
Here in my car, I feel safest of all. I can lock all my doors, and it's the only way in cars.
Welcome back to 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, coming to you semi-live from downtown Greeley.
Why have you made me play this?
Okay, I made you play that specifically for our very own Nick
So Kenny. Nick could dance?
So
dear
Nick,
God in heaven.
We are celebrating the fact that our...
Yes, the stars, for crying out loud.
Can I finish?
Yes, sorry.
That our very own Nick Kenny completed his second exam today, which gets him halfway to all of his exams that he's currently doing for his next stage of his career. So we are celebrating him because he's halfway there. He's passed two of the four.
Series 7 and SIE are down. I have the Series 66, which...
Will
air on Wednesday, but Facebook for Nick Kenny will be...
Execute Series 66.
Absolutely, it will be, because I have to.
Yes.
That's the next big test, and then I have insurance tests after that, and then training.
And then there you go, and you're off and running.
Is that why you acting so testy earlier?
No, it's because... No, you know what? I can't say that on air.
Can we talk about the Mandalorian some more?
Mandalorian.
Can we actually talk about Din and Bo?
Din and Bo. So we had an interesting episode that started with the kind of first-person perspective, which was Bo-Katan for the new clan. And we saw what happened last episode of her accepting this is the way. And was she really going to not take off her helmet? But, you know, they fought a lot of monsters so far. But I really like the build-up, because she was able to take lead. And... this little kiddo, the one that we saw in the first episode getting kind of baptized into the way, gets taken off. Oh, do we talk about Grogu first?
Well, I think we talk about this because it was Paz Vizsla's son. And so he gets taken by this gigantic raptor and Bo is able to chase down the raptor to find where its nest is.
And you know what I like is that their jetpacks ran out of fuel, because I don't think we see that enough of, hey, there's limited fuel in all the things that we do. And so it was cool to see the Mandos run out of fuel.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that at first I wasn't sure how I felt about it. Now I do. I like the fact that we've seen multiple very large creatures that are just a part of the environment that the culvert has decided to kind of...
Yeah, you know, so you have a giant-ass alligator that destroyed their first baptism, and then you have this
giant eagle dinosaur...
Something that should be fighting Godzilla comes over and takes this foundling...
Should we call it? What was it?
Mothra. Mothra.
No, Gigadera?
No,
it's something like that. It's something like that.
I think you're on the right track.
I am.
And I we'll figure it out soon. But takes the kid, and... Well, Bo-Katan's the smartest one to get her ship and chase after it. And then I love the whole sequence of them, you know, so at the end of the last episode, we're wondering what's Bo-Katan's plan. Is she really a part of this clan or is she not? And, you know, she's asking Din, hey, how do you, around this fire?
Well, you know,
how do you eat?
Yeah. How do you eat?
And they knew they couldn't sneak up on this beast. They couldn't, you know, so they had to plan this out. And I like that. It's Mando strategy.
Well, and she knew this. And so she obviously had identified herself as, I know this. And so they very quickly fell into that, hey, you're the head of the leading party. You're going to do this. We're going to go off and do it. And, you know, they even talk about that. Well, how do you do this? Well, you get to stay by the fire. We all leave because you're the head of the, you know, the hunting party. So they do a good job of that. They build it up. The only part that I had a problem with is like, so how long did it take them to get there? They camped overnight. They did all these things. And oh, by the way, now finally the raptor decides to show up a day later
and regurgitate
the kids. So that
without
he can be fed.
Like slime or grum or
like,
anything.
What in the world was that? I would have thought that would have happened a day before. And it's like, you don't have time. But anyways, they save the kid. They all get their butts kind
of
kicked.
One of the best action sequences, too, of like them fighting thing, tying up its legs, its wings. Yeah. And then for that, it was very Jurassic Parky at the end when it got swallowed up by the alligator that we saw in episode one.
Or episode one when, you know, Qui-Gon's like, there's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish.
So you get those
things. But that wasn't a fish. That was a flying beast.
You're right. It wasn't. But we're dealing with that. But I think the best part of the story is then they come back. They're all beat up. They're all bruised. Bo-Katan loses one of her pauldrons. And the armor says, I can replace it. But I can't do it with the updated refinements. And then asks her what signet she wants. If she wants a Night Owl. And she says, no. May I take the Mythosaur? And the armor says the Mythosaur belongs to everybody, so go ahead. And then Bo starts to open up and said, what would you say if I told you I'd seen one? And I love how the armor is thinking this is a vision.
The armor basically says, bullshish, shish, bullshish. Yeah, I can't say baloney. The other word on, right?
No, you cannot.
So I said bullshish.
Wow.
Covered me that way.
Well done. And the armor's talking to her, but realizing
she's not wrong.
I know, but the armor is like thinking you're seeing a vision, that you've like had a dream or whatever else. And Bo's going, no, I've actually seen one. And I love what she says.
So she was in water. So that was a very wet visual she might have had, right, Scott? He turned away from me. He's going to backhand me in one moment, I promise you.
So, I am so proud.
Yeah, I knew I'd get it.
My gosh.
I knew I'd get it.
We were trying to get that. No, but... But we're starting to see Bo leaning into and being a part of this. And I think we're going to see where it goes. And I think between this, and we'll talk about it on the Bad Batch in the next segment, about how we're starting to tie in more and more things that is setting us up for the big reveal where we're going to get Thrawn. We're going to get some other elements that are going to come out of this. And I still think the best moment of the episode that is so meme-worthy that it's already showing up. Meme-worthy.
Yes.
Is when Paz Vizsla says, one does not speak unless one knows.
Ha.
And I think we all could.
Wait. No, Mando says that.
No.
To Paz Vizsla's kid.
No. It gets said, I believe, three different times in the episode. But Paz says it to his son, one does not speak unless one knows. And it's...
I don't remember passing. I remember Mando saying it.
Yeah.
When he had Grogu face off, which was awesome. And Grogu showed what he's capable of.
Yep, he did.
And even Bo-Katan took a kind of maternal approach mm-hmm. to Grogu. So there's... Okay, I don't want to say it, but I will, just for now. Mando has taken a very paternal approach to Grogu and has since he met him way back when on whatever planet that was. And then now Bo-Katan is taking a very maternal Mandalorian approach. But I'm going to bring up what I just recently watched, which was the season finale of season 2 of Mando, where, okay, Bo-Katan technically has lost the opportunity to take control of Mandalore 3 times. And when it came to taking down Moff Gideon, she makes it very clear she wants him to get the Darksaber. And now that Din has the Darksaber, that Bo seems to not really be... I don't see how her fire to have the Darksaber between season 2 finale of Mando to now has changed. So what are her motives? We have 1 minute left, Scott.
I don't know.
Do you think she's good or bad? And I want her to be good. I'm normally a pessimist, but I want her to be good. But based on her 3 failed attempts, she wants the Darksaber for herself, which Moff Gideon was well aware of, which is why he put himself in the position to be taken over and conquered by Din after the Dark Troopers failed. He knew what she wanted, and now yep. Din has that. So, did her mind shift change?
I don't know that it's changed. I think she's figuring out and recognizing that there may be a better and a different way. And, for the record, you were correct. Din does say that because he's talking and he says, is that not what the creed says? So, I was wrong.
It's okay,
I apologize.
Scott. Don't worry. It's okay. Wow. A lot still to unfold with this season's Mandalorian. We're going to come back with the Bad Batch and talk about that after this break. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA in the Aloe Fiber Studios in downtown Greeley. You know, when I start my day, I hate to cross my hairs. Scott, you don't have that problem, do you?
Wow, thanks. I really appreciate you just throwing that out there.
I had no idea what I was going to start with.
Kick my dog while you're here?
Jeez. Oh, man.
Nick, I just want to let you know, I do have better hair than you do. So when it comes to this, I am better than you. So, Scott, I got your back.
Thank you.
And if you need a wig, I've got long enough hair.
That's so savage. Wow. All right, if you've seen our picture on Facebook, you've seen us at what's Denver's Con?
Denver Fan X
last year. And we are hoping to go again. Oh, and I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. But... sorry, Scott, that was unfair. Uncalled for.
It was.
Gates McFadden will be at Denver Fan X, by the way, just to let everybody know.
Who's Gates McFadden?
Dr. Crusher.
Mm-hmm.
From what?
Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that in the next segment.
I won't be here. Bad Batch! Wow. So there might be a potential. Well, Bad Batch has what, 4 episodes left?
2.
2.
And they actually aired this morning. Based on the show airtime.
Both of them.
Yeah. So they dropped the last 2 episodes. That's why I said in the last segment that I think that there is an opportunity that we're going to see Thrawn references.
Ooh, yeah.
On today, this morning, because we've already seen some of that reference based on some of the original story work that Timothy Zahn did Mount Tantus and Grand Admiral Thrawn and the cloning, as well as in the Republic Commando series. You remember Karen Travis did the books.
Oh, yes.
And there was
phenomenal.
A great story about this doctor who was working for the Old Republic, thought she was working for good, and was creating a virus that attacked only clones. And there was a part in either the 3rd book, I can't remember exactly, but the clones have to go in and capture this doctor, and she eventually basically you know, starts working for the rebellion because she realizes how horrible it is. This is after order, you know, it's right around the time of Order 66 and all that other stuff. But yeah, she was literally trying to create a virus. So they are researching that. Yeah. Well,
because look, we have a lot of clones still out there. Yes. And the question is, do they understand what's going on? Do they revolt or does something, you know, and Scott, I think if the clones would have revolted and fought, there would have been another Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And they would have talked about it with Obi-Wan and Luke in episode 4. So I can see a very certain way that they find a way to eliminate the outstanding clones without much conflict.
Well, I think that's what Hemlock is trying to build. I mean, we see that towards the end of the episode where Crosshair's trying to escape and he gets into the one communication room and they drop this toxin on him and it knocks him out and Hemlock walks in completely, you know,
inoculated,
unaffected.
Yeah.
And he says, I've created a tolerance to it or an immunity to it. And I think it really is building up this concept that they're trying to create a virus that simply attacks the clone genome, and he wants Omega because he is feeling like, as a pure clone of Django, she will be the key to him making sure that he can perfect it. So I really think that's what we're seeing. We're going to see this whole, they're going to use a virus to eradicate and eliminate the clones just like that. And then now we're dealing with the regular stormtroopers who the clones are realizing they are being replaced by slowly. And, you know, we saw the things where, and I can't remember the name of the admiral that they hung out to dry in the previous episodes that was, you know, that fired on Kamino.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it literally got Palps the traction he needed in order to do the things, in order to make sure that they shut that down. So I'm loving where they're going with it. I love Hemlock as a villain. I think it plays,
you know,
into that mindset.
He's played by is the guy who has that infamous mole from It, the original It. He was the kid with the mole on his cheek.
Well, and he also was in Westworld.
He was. Yeah. And he was also in Psych, which is an underrated show. If you haven't seen it, please watch it. It's so good. But he plays a very good villain.
He does.
And, you know, Crosshair reached out, and Crosshair certainly has reached his limit of the Empire. And what about that other doctor, though, who, well, he's stunned. Is she going to end up being a good person to help him survive, maybe reunite, reconnect with the Bad Batch? Because they're looking to come to save him, I think. Is that your interpretation after that message?
Maybe. I don't know if they're going to come save him. I don't know if it was Crosshair's way to warn them. I really don't know. But, you know, there's a lot of things up in the air that I think make it a good story. It's like, what could happen? Where could they go with it? You know, my biggest complaint with the Bad Batch this season is that no matter where the Bad Batch show up, things happen immediately and things go south instantaneously. But I think we're set up for a final two episodes today to give us some answers or at least give us some direction. I don't know if there's going to be a season three. I don't think there is. But I think we've got a great opportunity to set up these, you know, cross-pollinations between the Mandalorian and Bad Batch of things that are going to happen. And
but if there's no season three, I don't see them wrapping up Omega's storyline in the final two episodes. I think there either needs to be a season three or somehow she's reintroduced. Here's why are they so infatuated with Omega?
I think because she's an that we're going off of the premise that is she is as close to, and I still don't get this, but we remember that Boba was an unaltered clone of Django.
And she is too, right?
Well, she is too, but
a female.
We're dealing with that on a gender standpoint. And again, I don't know where in the Star Wars lore that you deal with that. Is that an altered clone? Or
there's a Congress
chromosome?
And it comes down to that, and it's really weird.
Yeah, I don't quite understand it. But so I think that she is a highly sought after asset because she was developed by the Kaminoans and obviously was created after Boba, because Boba was originally created when the first batch of clones were created. So you think about that. He's older than Omega at this point in time. So Omega came later, and there was something about that they wanted to use for research or development or whatever else. And so I think she's the key to a lot of stuff that Hemlock wants to do from at a genetic level, both from cloning and from an eradication of the clones.
Do you think the Kamina one that they have, it's not Lama Sue, I can't remember who they have, might know that and they'll get it from her for, and then them extrapolate, them being the Empire, extrapolating that from Omega?
Yeah, absolutely. Because eventually we want to get to the point all the way to episode 7 where we're cloning Palpatine.
But the Kaminoans, were they just doing this on their own, or was that Jango's?
No.
Jango wanted a pure clone, which is
that
Boba.
Was part of his payment.
So did they just, we're going to recreate him. Mm-hmm. Can we create an Omega?
Yeah.
And that's where they kept her secret?
Well, Jango got his payment. You remember, besides his fee, he wanted an unaltered clone of himself. That's all he wanted. So he got what he wanted. So what they did with his DNA was up to them.
Hmm. See, he's dead. Boba probably has no idea that Omega is alive.
Yeah, I don't think those two...
But why do you think she is so important? To me, it's just clones.
Well, but I think because she is as close to an unaltered clone, because they tweaked Jango's DNA when they created the clones. So they are all a modified version, and I think Omega's as close to the real deal as you're ever going to get. It's as close to the base formula.
Folks, if you did not like the sequels, they are building an epic story to make those sequel stories work. We're seeing it, I hope. We're seeing it all. Stay tuned. We have more to dissect next week on The Mandalorian and the Clone Wars season finale. But also, we'll be back with Picard. You could be in, Mike, about... I don't want to start yet. It's such a good song.
It is a very good song.
And
you know what? I think this could be Din Djarin's theme song.
No, I don't know.
Sweet Child of Mine.
Sweet. Oh, there was a funny meme. I didn't send it to you guys yet, but it was from our review of Last of Us and with Mandalorian, and I just last night rewatched the second season finale where Moff Gideon sets himself up to be conquered by Din. And I pulled up the meme. It's funny. It makes me laugh. I'm going to still go until I pull it up. Where is it? That's the wrong way. Here we go. Execute series 66.
Wow, yeah. This is
okay,
really
here
terrible.
You go. Of Din looking at Moff Gideon in his eyes, and he says, "You're sparing my life." And then he subsequently says, "This should be interesting," because he knew what he was doing. And then you do a little flash on the next of the three-part meme in the middle of Pablo Pascal.
Pedro.
Looking at Kathleen? No, Eileen.
Marlene. Oh my gosh, this is so bad.
Wow. So anyway, Picard.
No, hold on, I'm almost there.
No, you're.
I butchered it. Okay, Micah,
yeah, you
but I'm almost
it.
There.
You can.
Looking
we
at
can,
her
we
and
can
just
talk
saying,
about
you
this next
just
week.
Come after him being Grogu, and then he shoots her. So why didn't Din shoot Moff Gideon there? Because they know they're going to come after Grogu.
I guess he should have. He should have shot him.
Now we have Picard, which is based on the infamous 1927 show.
Well, and would you stop it? Okay, Nick, how about you just take a break for a moment? We got this for
okay,
now.
Okay, I'll do that.
You do that. But so, you know, Micah, you and I have been watching Picard more so than Nick has been. And I feel like the last few episodes have gotten better. I'm curious to get your take on... You know, the whole banter between Riker and Worf in this episode. I liked it, but I was wondering whether or not you felt like that it was another, we're going too far away from the characters and I don't like it.
I don't recall them being this funny together, but it works for me. It's fine. I didn't see any, like, huge. huge flaw with the characters or anything. The only problem I had with, you know, them messing up a character is with Geordi. I can understand Geordi being upset that Picard might put his daughters in danger. I would totally get that. It's just I don't understand him being like so bitter in his personality changing and him thinking that he was very stubborn, because I don't think he was too stubborn.
See, and I thought it played into him having to be a father, and I also liked it how it paralleled how Picard has made some irrational decisions because he's now a father. And so I liked the way they were kind of going down that path to where, you know, Geordi's pushing back on Picard because he's a father and he's trying to protect his daughter, just like Picard did something he normally wouldn't do, maybe because it was his son. And, you know, maybe it's too consequential or too much of a coincidence that we keep dealing with all these family things. But I
feel
I
like
it worked.
It's the writer trying to go,
they're copying Star Wars family. I mean, that was the whole saga of Star Wars was family. So
I thought that was the Fast and the Furious. Sorry.
Okay, that's offensive, Scott.
For Star Trek, Star Wars, or Fast and the Furious?
Both. For Star Trek and Star Wars, Fast and the Furious, don't even bring that up.
It's all about family. And nobody shows up in Shazam either. So what are you going to do? But
that was the – Micah, you said – no. Quiet.
It has been the best episode so far. It was interesting them bringing in Brent Spiner's data slash lore slash – Before, I mean, it was, they brought in, I didn't know how they were going to do it because Brent Spiner is in his late 60s now.
Yeah.
So how are they going to show, like, are they going to, like, do some kind of, like, major skin peel back or?
Yeah, no, they didn't do the de-aging. And I like the way that they referenced it, that it was now a, you know, a positronic, I think that's a reference, body, similar to what they did with Picard.
What's a positronic mean?
It is somewhat human, somewhat android. But they had his old head in Daystrom Station. And so they show that. So it's like, okay, there's the old data. Here's the current data that is now something completely different, that is an amalgamation of all these four personalities, and they're working through it. So.
And they're trying to make him more human.
Yep.
But unfortunately, it didn't work. The four different personalities are fighting with one another, which, of course, Lore, Data's evil twin, is going to explode onto the scene and start fighting everybody in the next episode.
Why isn't Data's evil twin named Atom? Atad?
I
have
don't
no
know.
Idea.
Couldn't tell you.
Well, he came first before Data.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He was the one with the emotions, and his emotions got him
into trouble.
Got him deactivated. Mm-hmm. I think this was overall a pretty good episode. You had Moriarty. For those of you who are fans of the show, Moriarty, or aren't fans of the show, Moriarty is a holodeck character, and based off of Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. They used him, and I think in the Next Generation, they got sued.
Well, because they got some of those flashbacks where you see Riker engaging with that. So that was actual footage from the original series, if I recall.
Yeah, him and
Data.
And Data, that was the pilot episode.
Yep, and in that whole moment where Data looks at him and he goes, that's beautiful.
Marvelous.
Marvelous. Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't remember the right term, but
yeah. So that was kind of interesting. It was like Data had created Moriarty.
Yeah.
Because the last they had left off, Moriarty was in, they had like locked him away.
Yeah. Now the idea that he was being brought back to kind of quote unquote help secure the space.
Well,
connected him to Riker. Yeah.
I thought maybe they would put him in Daystrom because he was a very, very genius. Like, he even outsmarted Data at one point and outsmarted everybody else. He's a fantastic character.
Sure.
But the fact that Picard is actually the weapon that was stolen.
Yeah, that's interesting. That at the end of the day, the changeling stole Picard's dead body. Or his dead body parts, And that's what they're going to use against him. And so I wonder if that is what they're going to use to try and explain how the changelings have figured out how to create human organs when they, you know, when they take on the appearance of another human, that that's what they're using it for. That's, you know, what they're trying to do is just get better at taking an individual's DNA.
Then why do they need Junior?
I know.
Junior.
And that's what I don't understand. And that's part of where I struggle with this whole series, is that we keep trying to bring it back to these same few characters when we have been doing Star Trek for hundreds of years, and it doesn't all have to come back to the same three or four people, but it seems to. But and that's how we get fan service. That's how we get people to appreciate and support what's going on, and they love it. But
I'm just wondering if Junior and Junior's new girlfriend, because I saw them making eyes at each other, and I don't it. You don't need another love story in Star Trek.
We make
you don't need to go back in time
for anti-love stories. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, after listening in on this segment, which fandom is doing most well right now? Marvel, DC, Star Trek, Star Wars, or other?
You know, out of those that you're giving us, I think realistically, I think that Star Wars is Lucasfilm. I think with the Mandalorian and the Bad Batch and Ahsoka, I think that's doing well. DC's kind of fallen on their face as of late. Marvel also.
I agree.
To Scott's and me too. If you want more of our opinions, tune in next week for an all-new Nerd Show as we recap the final episodes of Bad Batch, more of the Mandalorian, some Picard, and otherwise.
Maybe we'll talk about some of the DC problems that have come up as of late.
Absolutely.
With Kang.
And that's Marvel.
I know. Oh, yeah, Marvel. Anyways.
Nerdians, you stay nerdy.